This podcast is proudly sponsored by Aspire Autism Consultancy, the leading providers of autism and ADHD training, educating and enabling families, therapists, and healthcare professionals to gain knowledge and understanding of neurodiversity. The courses are written by two specialist psychotherapists and include the voices and lived experiences of neurodivergent individuals. For further details, go to www.aspireautismconsultancy.co.uk. Welcome to Different Minds, a podcast series about the different ways our brains can work and interpret information. I'm John Offord. I'm delighted to be joined by former Great British Bake Off contestant Lizzie Acker, a car production operative from Liverpool who has dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADHD and concentration disorder. Welcome to Different Minds, Lizzie.
Hi.
Hi, and congratulations for making such a mark on Great British Bake Off. It was such a great show. You must be so pleased.
I am. Honestly, I think everyone's quite shocked in the outreach that I've got and the outreach that Bake Off themselves. We've got people being emailing them about it, about the last cake and everything. And I think it said they're cute, really. Hopefully next year in the cast we'll have more neurodivergent people, or I don't think Bake Off's ever had a wheelchair user, have
it? Right, brilliant. No, it's fantastic that it's the TV is becoming more inclusive, and that's obviously a good thing. So just tell me, how did you end up on Great British Bake Off?
One of my friends, he is a pastry chef and everything, and for years he's been like, oh, you should apply, definitely. And I've just kind of been like far too busy.
Yeah.
And then with lockdown and everything, I had a lot more time to bake. So I was baking for the whole street. And he was like, why didn't you apply this year? What's the worst that can happen? I'd done the application, didn't really pay too much attention to it because it's pages long. And right. I was not in for writing paragraphs.
Yeah.
So then on the last day, it could be sent off. He texted me and he was like, have you applied yet? And I was like, no. And he was like, why? He was like, the worst they're going to say is no. And you don't think you're getting on anyway. So so I pressed send. And then from there, it was just like, he started ringing me. And I was like, oh, wow. And every time I'd get through, me and my family would like get a bottle of champagne and celebrate because we'd be like, that's it. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
So when I actually found out I was on the show, I was like, just cry my eyes out and everything.
So what was it like just actually doing the filming? Whereabouts is it filmed, Great British Bake Off?
In Essex.
Right.
A long way from Liverpool.
Yeah.
It was quite hard because obviously we had to live in a bubble, so we couldn't be with our families, the dog. It was but it was the best thing ever because you make like a second family there, like the whole production team and obviously the other bakers.
Yeah,
it's just absolutely amazing. Obviously you go into it and you're thinking, oh, like, are these other 11 people actually going to be all right? Because I never seen Bake Off as a competition.
Right. Wow.
I was thinking, are these other bakers going to be really competitive? Because that's not my thing at all. I'd just be like,
and how was it? Was it not kind of, I guess the pressure was on, like, obviously you're passionate about baking, but you know, when there's all these cameras on you, is that not an added stress?
Oh, massively. And the time limits, because I never bake anything fast. I'm always like, I'll do part of it, stick in the oven. And then when it comes out cool, I'll like go off and do something else, come back like a day later. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'll ice that now. Or, but the time limit, everything was still hot. It was a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
A lot to change and get used to.
And did you watch yourself back on TV then, every episode? How did when it came about? How did
Oh, yeah. It's awful. I never knew it was that Scouse. This came on, I was like, what? I didn't sound like that. but it was, amazing. And the first episode I watched with last year's baker Mark from Liverpool, and all my family and one of my friends' bars. So So it's just been like a lovely experience for like the whole family, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And baking's something you've always done since being a child, is it? Or
yeah. So I've done it on and off really, because I've had many a hobby. So I would start baking and then like give up during keyboard lessons, then do something else. And so
brilliant. And what does the future have in store for you? So are you I know you've been working in a car production place. Are you going back to that?
So I'm already back.
Right.
I'm already back building cars. And then I leave the factory and then go and do mad stuff like interviews like this. And like, so it's like, basically I'm like Hannah Montana. That's what I feel like at the minute. Because I'm in this car factory at overalls for most of the day. And then I come out, I'm like turning on Christmas lights, doing podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
And
everyone
keeps saying, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know.
Just see where it goes, see where it takes. Yeah, brilliant. Good for you. I want to talk a little bit about dyslexia, and if you could tell me what it was like going to school in Liverpool and how your dyslexia diagnosis came about.
So when I was in primary school, the other kids were just well ahead of me and everything. And I'm lucky enough to have like quite a pushy mum that she like was like, no, just because the teachers kept saying, oh, she's just lazy. And my mum was like, no, there's something wrong. Because I've got one cousin who's 3 months younger, and I've got another cousin who's 4 months older, and they were like miles ahead of me. And she was just like, it's not right. So she really pushed for a diagnosis for me. But yeah, it was really visible. Like, my real name's Elizabeth Acker. I can't understand A's and E's, still get them mixed up. So it was a big like, and people were on pocket books and I was still on red books, stuff like that. So then I got diagnosed, and then I started going to special needs unit, and like learning different ways of learning, because that was the main thing. Like, I just didn't fit into mainstream learning. And I couldn't learn the class sizes that were so big, and there isn't much one-to-one help. When I got to senior school, I got like a classroom assistant with me in most classes, but it still took me like 4 times to get like a maths GCSE, to get a C.
So does that, when you were young, does that mean you couldn't read or write at all?
Probably until I was like 7 or 8, I couldn't read. And writing's been on and off. I'm sure, like, I haven't checked my plus 16 reporting ages, but my reading age is something like 11 years
right
still.
How did that make you feel, Lizzie? Presumably you wanted to be the same as everyone else. What did teachers and other kids, how did they react to that?
Teachers, some were all right, some were a bit dodgy. One told me that everyone's got light bulbs in their head, yours don't just work. I don't think the other kids, I don't remember like much from the other kids, to be honest. I think it was just mainly the teachers. I think especially going to SEN unit after school.
Can you tell us what an SEN is?
Special educational needs unit. So it was kids with like autism, dyslexia, everything. Just it was like, like a tutor.
Yeah.
But I'd go like 3 times a week, and when you went there, you were around kids that, because obviously you do feel a bit different in like mainstream school, but there you felt like normal in a way. And then I was like, oh, well, it just makes you feel like you're not the only one.
So if someone said to you, what is dyslexia? What actually is it? How would you describe it?
I'd just say it dyslexia for me is like a bit of a roadblock for reading and writing.
Yeah.
Because I can read and I can write.
Yeah.
I just struggle with some things.
Yeah. So you also have dyspraxia, Lizzie. What is dyspraxia?
So dyspraxia is really not well talked about at all.
Yeah.
So it's more to do with coordination.
Yeah.
And things like that. So when I was younger, because once I had one diagnosis, and then you kind of like in special needs units and stuff, you're around people that can spot signs far more easily, yeah. And push for more diagnoses, obviously, if they can see the signs of other things. So I think at the time there was like a big study going on in Manchester, because all these SEN issues are really I don't want to say they're quite young, but they are, in the amount of research that's getting put into them.
Yeah. And our understanding of these conditions is getting better, isn't it, than what it was maybe 10, 20 years ago. But obviously there's still a way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was diagnosed like 10 or something, 12. It's just about coordination and like, I want to say that's why I was so messy on being off, but it wasn't. I'm just a messy person. That would just be a cop out.
And what about, so you also have ADHD. So what is ADHD? And again, when were you diagnosed with that, Lizzie?
ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But in America, they call it ADD.
Right.
Like being learning loads, because people mess me and they're like, oh, I've got this. And I'm like, what is this person talking about?
Yeah.
And like dyslexia when I was diagnosed was all like maths, English, and now it's dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia, yeah.
As well. So that's what I mean. It's always transforming. And then like I'll say special education needs. Some people are like, oh, I don't like that word.
There's a massive paradigm shift when it comes to language, isn't it? It's constantly changing and evolving, and yeah, absolutely spot on what you have there. So
it's an active minefield, but ADHD, so I got diagnosed around the same time that I got diagnosed with dyspraxia. It's for me, I'm not like bouncing off the walls. I'm like got so many thoughts in my head, constantly. Jumps from one thing to another. It makes me quite forgetful. Yeah. Never really know where I am properly. Yeah. Stuff like that.
And do you get treatment for that, Lizzie? ADHD or?
No.
Right. So have you got like coping just mechanisms?
Self-managed.
Yeah. So how? Definitely. What are those coping mechanisms?
Me phone for one. Trying to put everything in the calendar for one day.
Yeah.
Lists, like, so because I can start one thing and then start a different thing, like when you try and tidy up and then next minute I'm off like trying to knit socks,
yeah,
and if I've got something to come back to be like, oh well, that's what I was actually trying to do today, let's try and skip, especially like right now I'm like moving house,
right.
So it's just
hell. a lot to do, yeah. And obviously, I'm guessing I know what concentration disorder is, but can you just tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it kind of links in more to the ADHD. Just, I think it's valued on like how much time you concentrate. I remember sitting with like this weird helmet on my head, and it had like things, and there was a bird. That was flying, and you had to keep the bird flying the minute concentration dip the bird fall. It's mad, like the stuff like that you do to be diagnosed. And then you just remember little snippets. You never remember like the whole diagnosis, because I'm like 28 now. This was like years and years ago, and then you just remember these random things, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember sitting on that bike helmet, like trying to make that bird fly, and people are like, what's she on about?
So obviously, you know, you're talking about concentration disorder and ADHD, and I guess some people might think, well, that means you have trouble concentrating. But I guess like this podcast is an example of you being really focused and able to concentrate. So yeah, how does that work?
Yeah. So it's about, see, because then with concentration disorder and then you've got ADHD, with ADHD you also get hyper-focus.
Yeah.
Which is like, kind of like focus on like random issues that maybe you don't want to focus on. Yeah. So like during prep for Bake Off, I was so hyper-focused on my clothes.
Yeah.
Like probably should have been focusing on recipes and stuff, and I'd be like, oh, what am I gonna wear? It doesn't mean that you can't concentrate. Obviously, I work in a car factory. I've got to concentrate for like long periods of time. Yeah. It's about being able to find like a little break in the minutes to just give yourself like a okay, let's think about this and then come back to it kind of thing.
I think I just heard your dog in the background. What dog have you got?
Oh, she's a Bedlington Terrier. Oh, she's nice. Just run downstairs to be let out. I'm just like, okay.
And is she a bit of a social media star? Is that right?
Oh, she is.
Yeah.
So she's always had an Instagram. She had an Instagram before I was on Bake Off. And she's always been a bit, because I take her everywhere. She goes to restaurants. She goes like to school and stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We do a Santa Dash every year in Liverpool.
No.
And before COVID, me and my friends queued up with her, and people were like, oh, Prudence. And then this year we done it, and people were still like, oh, there's Prudence. And me and Freya and Tom were stood in and Santa beards. Like, we just went on because I tell you, make cakes and now you're.
That is brilliant.
Talking about the dog.
So just going back to your diagnosis then. So do you think, I mean, some people say that all these are just labels, and, you know, we seem to be obsessed with labels in society. What's your view on that, Lizzie?
Yeah. You get loads of people like that. They're like, oh, it's not real.
Yeah.
ADHD's just naughty kids.
Yeah.
Dyslexia is just for lazy people.
Mm-hmm.
If you just picked up a book and read it, you'd be fine, you'd get better. But I think all these things are because people never really understand it. They hear about it once or twice and then they're just like, oh yeah, don't worry, I know about like dyslexia and stuff. But the dyslexia and ADHD and all that are just small names for really wide problems.
Yeah.
Well, not problems, but wide. Like, there's so many different variants within them that could affect different people. That, like, there's not many people that are actually the same who have got dyslexia. Like, I don't think I've met another person that I know with dyslexia who struggles as much with A's and E's as I do.
Yeah.
So these diagnoses are really personal to people. But the labels are what society struggles with, because it's what they see a very small issue with this.
Yeah.
And then just try and palm us all off with this one bit of knowledge that they know. But I just don't see it as labeling at all. I see it, if you are diagnosed, you are offered a lot more help.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. It's about making it easier for yourself.
Absolutely.
And also with diagnosis comes like acceptance of yourself.
Yeah.
It's nice to know that you're not struggling, not struggling for nothing, but not struggling because you've got these things that you need help with.
Yeah.
And that's what's making you struggle. It's not just you, like.
So it sounds like getting your diagnosis has made a massive difference to you, and it's give you give you reasons for why you maybe have been struggling to keep up in the past and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think especially for me, getting early diagnosis was a massive difference. Because
yeah.
obviously some people don't get diagnosis till a lot later in life. So
yeah.
when you're a kid, everything's kind of water off the kid's back, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kids just bounce back from everything.
Yeah.
So because I was in primary school, I've gone through most of the school system.
Yeah.
Knowing that I had all these issues. So it gave me a lot more time to accept them as well.
Yeah.
And I was that used to getting like extra help and stuff.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, well, I've got this, so maybe we should put this in place when I go anywhere. Which is a lot better because I feel like if I would have got diagnosed a lot later in life, it probably would have been a lot harder for me to accept help for one and to accept that I've been through all of that in my life and no one's ever picked up on anything.
I think with you, Lizzie, you're obviously a role model because you've too often when people have, you know, various conditions, we focus on the deficits rather than the strengths that these conditions bring you. And I think you're a great example of, you know, showing the positive strengths that comes with these conditions.
Oh, thanks. There's so many. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, we go on, like, about, you know, everyone in the world's different and we all bring a different viewpoint. Yeah, we are all different, but neurodiversity offers so much positives because, like, the way we think is so different and it's such an edge on other people. Definitely, like, I think it was prime during all of the weeks in Bake Off, all the briefs. I'd end up with something completely different compared to the rest. And I think it shows how beautiful a neurodivergent brain is because we don't think like mainstream. And it ends up just so beautiful.
Lizzie, absolutely. What do you think to like media representation of neurodiversity? So let's take example like autism, for example. So often like on television, you know, when people think of autism, they think of Rain Man from the 1980s and a very sort of stereotypical of what an autistic person is like. And obviously there are examples now, the media has moved on a lot since the 1980s, but it can like, you know, you think of programs like Undateables on Channel 4, and often they feature characters that, you know, take Tourette's, for example. Often, you know, it's only 10% of people with Tourette's that shout and swear. 90% of people with Tourette's don't shout and swear. But whenever people with Tourette's are on television, it's 9 times out of 10, it's the people that swear. Do you feel that you as a person is represented fairly on screen?
No, I don't think we're really represented at all. And I think, especially with autism, I haven't got autism, possibly for people with autism, but watching programs that represent autism, like Undateables, and have you seen Love on the Spectrum on Netflix?
Yeah,
it's always like, these poor people can't find anyone, and we're not sob stories. We're fantastic people. I mean, it's hard for people with normal brains to find people.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think it is getting better? I mean, there are some really, you know, there are some good steps being made out there with the media to try and be more inclusive. I guess, you know, you could say Great British Bake Off is an example of that.
Yeah. There's definitely more steps. But do you know what? Especially dyslexia. Dyslexia is so common. It affects, I think it's 1 in 7.
Yeah.
Or 1 in 10. I should probably check these facts before I should go on places. The celebrities that we have and the people on TV that we have, some of these people will have SEN issues and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd just be like to them, just like, I'm not forcing you to say like, oh, I've got this and this. But, you know, like, if you just randomly post about it one day or said it, it would help so many more people. Because yeah. people are like, oh, I've watched such and such for years and I've never, ever thought anything. And that's what makes it, like, so amazing, because it's the people that we deem as normal then have these diversity issues, and then you're like, oh, well, yeah, that's not what I normally see, like,
yeah.
how they're represented. Because, like, what is normal anyway?
I want to talk about your final cake design, which was amazing. And for anyone that's not seen it, we'll talk about that in a bit more detail shortly. But I just want to quote what you said when you were asked about what inspired you for your cake design. And you said, I'm celebrating being different. It's going to be a representation of my brain. I've got quite a few SEN issues. SEN is special educational needs. Dyslexic, dyspraxia, ADHD, and concentration disorder. People who are slightly different need to be celebrated and represented. I mean, what an amazing thing to say and do. And I just thought that was a really powerful piece of television.
Oh, Tom, I just see it as like, that's just my average day. I honestly don't mind telling anyone that. Yeah. I've been diagnosed with this, so I was mainly thinking people were going to say, oh my god, she's trying to use this as a sob story, when like everyone was like, oh my, that's the first time I've ever been felt like I've been seen on TV and stuff. I was like, this is weird that we're all getting like this emotional over a cake. But
so for anyone that's has not watched it yet or not seen you, can you just talk us through that actual scene, you know, what that cake that you made and what inspired you to make that cake?
So the cake, it was a free from challenge, and the cake had to be gluten free, which, so I've got no one in my immediate circle who's gluten free, so I had to do some research into why you'd be gluten free and stuff like that, because people like celiacs aren't, it's not talked about either really.
Mm.
And people, when people say gluten-free, you just think, oh, these are on one of these mad diets.
Mm.
Or stuff like that. And it's not, like, people really, like, gluten intolerance is so common.
Yeah.
Like, that needs to change as well. And then it got me thinking to, like, how am I different? And then I was like, well, I should just do an SEN cake, because that's how I'm different, and I'll just blend all these differences together to show it's all right to be different. Like, having differences is so normal, to be honest. Like, you're not different. You're, in fact, just averagely normal, like the rest of society. And then I was like, oh, how am I going to show it? Because I knew I wanted to put words on there for my dyslexia. So then I was like, oh, I'll do brain fuzz, because I think that was evident in GBBO, like the amount of shots that they had of me just staring a pot or something and looking around at everyone else. It's unreal. I'd be like, why am I never doing anything?
It just looked like an incredible cake. I've never seen one like it in my life. I've got to ask you, Lizzie, what did it taste like?
So it was coconut sponge with a lime, Swiss meringue, and a pineapple jam. So it tasted really tropical.
Sounds amazing.
Which is definitely how I'd want my brain to taste anyway. So it was really nice, really beautiful. I put like gold details on the fans with the letters, and had all these different colours, because obviously throughout Bake Off, all my bakes were dead colourful. So it was such an amazing cake to go out on. Like, it was fantastic. I think I cried for about 5 hours afterwards.
It was amazing. Yeah, brilliant. I just want to ask you, Lizzie, we might have people listening to this podcast or watching this podcast even. Maybe they're young people anywhere in the world, and maybe they can identify with some of what you've said today, and they're not sure, you know, whether to seek a diagnosis or not. What advice would you give them?
I'd definitely say seek diagnosis, because nothing bad's going to come from it. Even so, if they tell you you're, like, for example, dyslexic, if you don't actually want to have that label, you don't actually have to tell anyone. And no one will know anyway, but it's peace of mind for you. And then once you're a bit comfortable, you can tell whoever you want then. And then if you start a job, it makes it a lot easier to tell them. But first of all, like, it's private confidential information with your doctor. So they can't tell anyone, and you don't have to tell anyone. Like, just because you've got a diagnosis doesn't mean that you have to tell anyone. So I'd get diagnosed and then feel how comfortable you are and go from there. Like, we're not in no rush. Like, we're not going to tattoo, like, on our foreheads, like, lists of SEN issues. But it's for yourself, because it helps you accept who you are so much easier. And then that's what I think life is about, just accepting you, like, and trying not, like, not trying to fit into, like, what Cosmo or OK Magazine is piping. Like, just do yourself, and unless it's someone that you care about, they're the only opinions that ever matter, really.
Absolutely. Well said, yeah. And the last question, Lizzie, and this is a question I ask all my guests on the Different Minds podcast series. If you had the opportunity, what advice would you give your younger self?
Probably to try and stick at some hobbies some more.
Yeah.
Instead of getting, like, a couple of weeks in and then giving up. I think if I would have stuck to things a bit more, it probably would have given me aim a bit more. I want to say, like, so I'm not too flitty, because I still am to this day very, like, I'll start this and then I'll start this and then I'll start this. And that's why I haven't baked in, like, 2 weeks. Yeah. Because I literally cannot commit. Yeah. So I think maybe it would have, like, maybe I would have found ways to be able to commit more to things.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, Lizzie, thank you so much for talking to me today. Obviously, you're a great role model, and, you know, the work that you've done to highlight how we should celebrate difference and represent difference is amazing. And I just think you're really inspirational, and yeah, keep up the good work. It's so great to see how positive you are and how successful you are. And you know, as you say, it takes all of it. It makes the world interesting if we're all different, and we should celebrate difference. And that's obviously a good thing. So it was such a pleasure speaking to you today.
Oh, thanks so much. I could waffle on about SEM for hours, to be honest.
You'll have to come back and chat to us in a year's time. We'll see how you're getting on. So Lizzie, you've got an exciting day ahead. Are you allowed to tell us anything about what you're doing today?
Yeah, so I'm going to my first red carpet tonight, which is the National Pet Awards, and I'm taking Prue as my plus one.
Oh, amazing.
So just before the podcast, I'm, like, running around, like, trying to think, like, what do you even wear to a red carpet? These people have stylists, and I'm just going to turn up, like, hello.
That's brilliant. Well, that's amazing. Well, have a good time. Oh, all right. Well, you take care. Pleasure speaking to you again.
Nice seeing you.
Yeah, you take care.
See ya. Nice seeing you.
Bye.
Bye.